Hello and welcome back to another episode of the 100K Freelancer Club podcast. Today I spoke with the incredible Leanne Lea Lacaba, celebrated as one of the 100 most influential Filipino women. We dove into how remote work is reshaping the globe, especially in places like the Philippines, and how AI-enhanced virtual assistants can be a game changer for freelancers looking to scale. She shares her expertise and tips on maximizing virtual assistants to grow your business, work smarter, and embrace the freedom that remote work offers. But before we dive in, I'd love it if you could hit that subscribe or follow button. No matter where you're listening to that podcast, it really does help us out, and I can continue to bring you great guests from freelancers all around the world. But without any more promo, let's dive straight into the podcast. How are you doing today, Leanne?
Fantastic. It's a Monday evening here at my end, so it's been a long day, but I've been looking forward to this podcast.
Yeah, I mean, thanks for joining. I've been looking forward to having you on as well. I've got a bunch of questions that I'm dying to ask you and to learn from you. So we're actually connecting from two opposite ends of the world almost right now. So I'm here in Spain, and you're in the Philippines, right?
Yep. Yeah, that's right.
First of all, a few questions about the Philippines. Like, has this remote work, so like, you know, the freelance remote work lifestyle, has that been big in that work culture or in your work culture for a while? Or has it been more just since COVID that it's been sort of introduced?
It depends on who you ask. I'm also saying this because the biggest for me, I've been doing this for a while. I know a lot of people who work remotely, but I know it is... in the last 3 years, that's only really when it's been taking off. But it has taken off here. But pre-lockdowns and everything else, it was kind of people thought it was a scam, to be honest. Like when I was hiring pre-lockdowns, people would usually say, you don't have an office, so I can just work anywhere. I can work from home and our coffee shop. I'm like, yeah, no, you're pretty, like, you can work anywhere. So I would say now it is, but I remember a time before where people thought it was a scam to be able to work from home.
Yeah, I mean, did people also think on the employer-wise, that if you were looking for a client and they go, oh, where's your office? And you said, I don't have one. Was that a big red flag for them as well?
Yeah, we did end up even getting just a co-working space to say that we had an office at one point, just because people thought it was really weird that you didn't have an office. You know, are you not going to pay me for my work? Are you going to give me like my bank details and all? Like, no, you're a full like employee. You'll get social security benefits and all of that. You just work from home. So it was a struggle for a little bit there.
Yeah, I remember back in the day in England, actually, it was a kind of a similar thing, but it was with the landline. So essentially, if your business didn't have like a landline number, so like an office number that they would call, then people would be weary, like, oh, is this a real business? This does seem a bit sketchy. So it kind of sounds like that. But now I think since COVID, everything's gone remote and it's just expected. I wouldn't even, you know, other than big like retail businesses, any other business, I wouldn't expect them to have a landline that I would ring. It would just be like mobile numbers, or I'd be in contact with a specific person at that company. You know, even nowadays through like Instagram DMs and stuff, it has changed an awful lot. But I'll jump in and ask you as well. So you are the CEO and co-founder of 2XU. So do you want to jump in and give us a brief introduction of yourself, who you are, and how you came to found that company?
So I always think of my like timeline in my age, because it then is a little bit easier for me to map it out. So I started working as a freelance writer when I was 15 years old. No one asked you what online work is. It was 2011, and I remember clearly one of my clients even offering to pay me in Bitcoin, and I said, "What, Bitcoin?" Should have said yes. Old Bitcoin right now. But I started out, it was that long ago that Bitcoin was worth, I think at that point Bitcoin was like $10 each, because I was getting paid that much basically to write articles, ghostwrite for people, so on and so forth. So I started there when I was 18. I sadly went through a very tragic, almost life-ending event that I was like, At that point, I was in college, and I was like, if I survive this, I want to change my life. I don't want to just be working, because my dream at that time was to become a journalist in the New York Times, find a corporate job, and of course that whole shtick basically. I remember like, okay, that path is not for me. I want to create my path, whatever that looked like. And I have this freelancing thing. It's been fun. I've been doing graphic work and video editing work as well, but I want to see what else is how else I can pursue this. So with that, I got my first full-time job working remotely for a book publishing company. So it was a every bookworm's dream, because I was paid to read books and edit them and correct errors out of them. That was my first full-time job. That was a startup. And then I was able to meet the founder of it, because they flew from the US to where I'm at in the Philippines. And we were talking, and they're like, hey, we're actually starting two other companies. The two managers that you have right now are going to be running those companies. Do you want to run the publishing company? I was like, sure. I was like 19 years old. I had no idea. I've just dropped out of college because I was too traumatized to go back to my old college. And basically started my kind of entrepreneurial journey then. And when I was a kid, I remember I had that spark of like wanting to start business, wanting to do different things. And I was like, oh, this is how I can get into it. This is how I can get started. So I got trained up on how to run businesses, how to run remote businesses, to be exact. And then when I was 23, I was running the publishing company for about 3 years at that point. I was like, okay, what's next? What else can I do? I've automated most of the business. It's now mostly, I can go 2 months basically. I think I did count it before. I could go 2 months without checking on the company, and everything will still be running. So I was like, I want to start a new business. And then my boss at that time, he said, instead of leaving, why not just partner with us? We have like these other companies that we have underneath. You could, I'll just be co-founder, but you would basically just run everything else. And I was like, seems smart. So that's basically how I started 2XU at 23, because I wanted to start an agency where I could help other people have the life that I've had in the last 7 years at that point, where I'm work able to work anywhere. I was traveling. I still am traveling at least once a month somewhere random. And I could bring my work with me. So that's kind of where the passion of 2XU came from, is I wanted to build that kind of a business where I would be hiring specialized people. In this case, we ended up with virtual assistants and having clients from all over the world. And at the same time, I'm given the freedom basically on both sides. So our clients were able to work remotely, and to, of course, my fellow Filipinos who are able to be there for their family, be there for very basically our culture of family first, and not having to choose between working from home or not being there for their family physically at all. So that's kind of where my journey is so far at 28 now.
Yeah, I mean that's awesome. You started super young. Even like most of the freelancers that I speak to are sort of after or sort of that late university phase where they're 20, 21, 22 and they're looking to get started at, that sort of age. But for you starting freelancing way before that, that's really impressive. And to be, co-founder of the company that young as well. Did you struggle with authority being that young, like getting yourself into those situations, getting yourself into those meeting rooms, getting your authority across, and just being able to be involved in those conversations? It must have took quite a big amount of confidence to be able to put yourself there, because usually most people feel imposter syndrome. They can I do this? Oh, I'm too young. Some people even use it as an excuse as not to do things. Oh, I'm too young, people won't take me seriously. But yeah, how did you face those challenges at such a young age?
Well, it was a mix, and it was a funny mix too, because my co-founder is this 6-foot American like guy who, anytime that people like see us, either that I am his girlfriend, I am his assistant, or I'm his side piece. And I was neither of that, because I see him as my dad at this point. But that was kind of one of the other things that I was conquering as well. It was not just the fact that I was 23, 24, talking to these people who have been building their business for the last like 15, 20 years. But I also had to kind of get through that hurdle. Thankfully, my co-founder has always been willing to be that silent partner type. So when I kind of started building that, I leaned both into the fact that I didn't have a lot of experience, so I was willing to make a lot of mistakes. And at the same time, I leaned into, for a little bit, I leaned into the being kind of seen as a prodigy, kind of that of like, oh, you started so young, you started doing this, you must go to places. So I leaned into kind of both ways of like, I know I don't have a lot of experience, but because you see I don't have a lot of experience, you understand that I will make mistakes. So I kind of did those two. And at the same time, there was a lot of just prejudice, which I don't now looking at, and now I'm hiring 20-year-olds and 22-year-olds, I don't fault them at all of seeing like, oh, are you sure you can do what you say you can do at such a young age? But for me, like I saw that and I did a lot of the work. I did, 50, 60, 80-hour work week sometimes. I would be open to making those mistakes, learning from them, and making a different mistake, hopefully next time. And I read all the books, got a lot of really good mentors. So I did the path, and I still am, years and years later, because it's just a constant thing of knowing that there's more for me to learn, there's more for me to grow into. Even though I'm only 4'11", there's still more to grow into, for sure in the future. That's kind of the mindset that I've kind of just adopted, was knowing that there's always more. Even though I'm 28 and I can see those 20-year-olds now, but at the same time, like, I know how that feels, and I'm willing to also help them get to where they want to be. So I just keep both balanced that in mind.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great perspective to have, especially from a leadership point of view. I think a lot of people, including myself, struggle to trust the younger generation or people younger than them to be able to complete tasks competently. I know you see a lot of stuff online as well about people faulting the younger generation, Gen Z, they're lazy, they don't work, this, that, and the other. But how. Obviously, you've been in that position before. You've been the young prodigy. How do you find and identify young prodigies now yourself, without running the risk of just employing somebody that does fit the stereotype of, they don't want to work hard, they slack off and stuff?
I think so. One of the funny ways that I've done it, and I do it when I've hired my current assistant, is I looked at how young they started working as well. That's a weird one, and I've seen that it works every single time. Where if they work while they were in college, or they worked to get themselves through college, even, or to get themselves Filipino culture, their siblings also through college. That's one thing that I always look to, and I'm like, oh, okay. So they've been able to start even really young. The second one is if they worked somewhere longer enough. Like I do coaching to people all the time of like, if a company's not serving you, if it's not working you, then it is okay to go and leave. But I also put in a lot of value in seeing someone who's worked in a company for 3 years, 4 years before they started looking for other work. Because I can see that they have been able to see the company go up and down. That's actually honestly the biggest thing, is they know that there'll be times where the company is doing amazing, and there's times where the company's just doing A-okay, and that's fine. Or sometimes the company's not doing so okay, but then they still take care of the people. So I like seeing the stories of people through their resumes, because that's all that I see. But then the other side of it is, when I'm talking to them, they have a life outside of what it is that they do. Like, they go to dance class. They don't just like have like, oh, my hobby is like watching Netflix at home, and that's it. And I'm like, okay, what else do you do to light yourself up? If they can find ways to light themselves up, I know that they're also going to be a good hire. So I have like little things that I look at when I'm looking at people. But the first two of like, if they worked before through college, or if they had a longer experience in one company, I know that they could be a really good hire.
Yeah, that's a good point actually, because nowadays you do see a lot of people jump from job to job, and I guess that kind of shows that they're not willing to commit and work with the employer to improve their conditions, because I guess it works both ways, right? You don't want somebody to be unhappy in a position, not say anything, and leave. A person should be able to express their concerns, and then if the company isn't able to fix them and help them grow, then yes, acceptable to leave. But just to be like, yeah, no, I'm not happy, I'm gone, it's quite a bad thing. So, yeah, that's quite a nice tip to look at the CV to see if they've been working in a particular place for a certain amount of time to see if they can weather the storm, so they say. But you are at 2XU, so you specialize in hiring and training. You say AI-enabled executive assistance. So you help businesses and freelancers find assistance for their businesses, right? And how important is that
AI-enabled bit for you. Is that kind of like a buzzword at the moment to sort of, you know, fit in with trends, or does that actually account for a good portion of the work that these assistants are doing?
So it's the moment that ChatGPT came out, I had two thoughts of like, one was, oh crap, this is seeing our assistants are going to get take it over, and two, I was like, no, if our assistants learn how to do this, they'll never get taken over. So that's, I basically took the other route of training our assistants. Every single time that we have someone new, they go through a course that I've created on how to use ChatGPT. Well, now we also have Google Gemini and everything else, but how to use ChatGPT primarily as a virtual assistant. This is how we can use it for email management, calendar management, creating emails for clients or content for clients. So the AI-enabled, it wasn't really a buzzword because I did right away. Like within the first 2 weeks that ChatGPT was out, all of our assistants were already using it. We've put out courses, we put out assets for them to be able to use. So for me, that it's still that same belief that popped in my head of like, you can't be replaced if you learn how to use it. You'll only be replaced if you refuse to use it. So that's kind of the same thing. And right now we're going into, we're going to start training them in automations, how to use certain tools that are coming up, and how to use it within working with their clients as well. So it's not just a buzzword, it's really something that I'm currently obsessed about, which means everyone else in the company is also working on.
Yeah, so it sounds like it's almost improved what you can get from a customer assistant. So now they've got the power of ChatGPT behind them as well. They can essentially, you know, get more done than what they could before in that same time frame. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting to see that, you know, you've leveraged that to your advantage, because like you said, most people are like that panic set in, like, oh my god, you know, is this going to like negatively affect my business? But you've pivoted right into that, so that's good to see. Yeah. And so a question I need to ask you, which should be good for all the freelancers out here listening, is that when would you recommend a freelancer to actually get a virtual assistant? Because obviously there's a cost element involved. So it's, you know, when you first start out and you know you get one or two clients and you've got a small amount of money coming in, maybe that isn't the best time to get a virtual assistant. But what is the optimum time for somebody, or what is the optimum time for a freelancer to get a virtual assistant?
So first thing is always if you have recurring money. That's the first thing. Because like an employee, basically, it's not just a virtual assistant. You're hiring an employee. You have to pay them month to month. Whether you have a lot of sales or no sales, you still have to pay them, or that's how you lose them. So that's the first thing, is if you have a recurring way to make money, already hire that person. Like I always like the story of how my co-founder hired his first like freelancer for his business. Is the moment that the publishing company was making over $1,000 a month, basically, he knew he could hire someone off from the Philippines based at that point, because he had that recurringly. He did that for 3 months. Okay, yep, we now need someone else to start doing like all of the other tasks that we don't like doing. So as the moment that you can get to that point where even if it's just someone who might be project-based or part-time, but you have a way to recurringly pay that person, that's the first sign. The second one is, if the business has hit like just like you can't do it alone anymore, like you're halving your time between admin, marketing, operations, everything else in your business, it's a little bit everywhere at once, basically, that's the next sign. Is it's not just revenue, but it's also like your time. Are you actually spending it on the right things? I like using the Pareto principle, where, you know, out of the 100 things you're doing in a day, or 10 things you're doing in a day in a more simplified way, two of them actually make you money. The rest of the 8 still need to get done. You don't need to trash them, but those are the ones that need to be delegated and or automated in the business. So it's realizing of like, oh, if I only focus, like for me, if I only focus on sales and content, I know my business isn't going to do really well, because I've built now the automations and the systems, so then someone else can take care of the rest. So it's realizing that. So those are the first two, actually. It's just recurring money, and then you've identified what are the things that you actually need to delegate in your business that won't hurt it in the long run.
Yeah. And how much does it cost nowadays for somebody to get a virtual assistant? Like, what's the going hourly rate?
I don't like going on hourly rate, mostly because you want to find someone who can give you results. And an hourly could go one way or the other. It could be that you're just, you hired someone who's just kind of prolonging the time as long as possible, or that you're getting someone who's a purely a beginner, who's just charging hourly because they also don't know the value of what they it is that they do. So I always try to go monthly, basically, of what that looks like. So from part-time to full-time, it could be that you're hiring someone ongoing for $1,000 to all the way to $7,000 a month, mostly because it depends on the quality of the person that you have. If you say like, oh, I can hire someone just here, why would I need to hire a virtual assistant in the first place? Well, one, that also costs you your location freedom. And the two is then, yes, you can hire someone at the same price. You know, let's say you found someone on the Philippines who is charging, you know, $2,000 to $3,000 a month. You say, oh, I can just hire someone locally here. But then what's the quality? Do they have the right experience? Do they have systems in place to help you out to actually build your business? Or will they be that same beginner person for you? Like, you have to build them up before they can actually take everything else off of your hands. So whenever it comes to cost, I always try to set those expectations, because so many people have so many misconceptions when it comes to that. Is that like, yeah, you can hire someone cheaper, sure, but then where would they be? Well, how can they actually, you know, that's why we're called 2X you. How can they actually 2X you in your business if they're still going to start from the same scratch that you are at the moment? So you want to hire someone a little bit smarter than you always. That's if you can hire someone smarter than you, that's even better. But that's kind of the expectations when it comes to cost.
Yeah, I think that is such a good point as well, to always hire someone smarter than you, because I think, as a freelancer and not having employed anybody before, it can be super difficult to train them. I mean, this is something that I struggled with massively, was I was always higher beneath me. So I'd be looking, like, as a beginner freelancer, the only thing I'd be looking at is how cheap can I employ somebody, because I want to keep profit margins high. And then I quickly learned that that is definitely not the way to go, because you end up spending more of your time training them, more of your time chasing their mistakes and fixing their mistakes and putting out fires than it's actually worth in the first place. I would think, for me anyway, for a virtual assistant, it would be, I would need somebody that is completely competent, that can come in, take over these tasks, and even show me how I could improve doing those tasks, or like what could be done. Like somebody that comes in and benefits, not somebody that's just come in to take, you know, a load off and then end up like taking a lot more work. But I think the term virtual assistant is really broad, right? Because when I first heard of virtual assistant and assistant, I was just assuming that it would be somebody to, you know, keep me on track as a freelancer anyway. I'm just talking from a purely freelance perspective, somebody to keep me on track, make sure these emails are responded to, they could help me, you know, book the best travel arrangements, they could do very, you know, basic bottom level stuff in the business to free up my time to do the more higher earning stuff in the business. But what I've come to see from speaking to you today and through, you know, research and speaking to other freelancers, that virtual assistants are kind of like, or they can be, correct me if I'm wrong, kind of like a one size fits all replacement for certain employees. So they can, it seems like nowadays they have a lot of experience and skills in the digital realm. So whether that be, you know, creating content, blog posts, search engine optimization, digital marketing, they seem to be a sort of well-rounded individuals that have a good skill set, a good base level skill set of all of these things. So I don't think they're absolute experts in, you know, each of the fields, but they have like a great understanding. So is that the case with 2XU? Do they, you say there's like training to get them up to a certain point. Is it more than just, you know, the bookings and, you know, doing the traditional assistant stuff, and now they're more of these very capable, almost digital marketers?
So it really depends. So I always say that if you are wanting to become a virtual assistant, know that you will have to be a Jill or jack of all trades. Like you will learn a little bit of marketing, a little bit of sales, a little bit of admin, a little bit of operations, because the reality of it is, one, there's not enough task for, let's say, like social media, because that's the one that you had a lot of really good examples on, like, or digital marketer. There's not enough work basically for your client to hire a digital marketer. So that's kind of why it falls to you. And my advice then to employers is, when there is enough, take that off of your assistant as fast as you can. So then your assistant is freed up to do other things. But that's usually why, is that's why you end up juggling a lot of different balls at once as a virtual assistant is that you are working basically kind of half jobs because it's not enough. It's not yet enough to hire this out full time to someone else. But then the other side that I always keep in mind I tell our clients to keep in mind is just have them focus on three outcomes. The moment it becomes four, then you need to start looking at maybe hiring someone part time or full time for that other work. Because the moment that the assistant has more than three, then it's just a little bit of overwhelm. It's a little bit of like miscommunication and just people not being happy long term. So that's kind of the reality of it. I always think of assistants as the movie Devil Wears Prada, where she had two assistants. One was assistant one, basically, was the one who's kind of in charge of admin and operations, of going over meetings, making sure people are working on the right things. And of course, we had assistant two, which was the main character, where she was more on the personal side of like her flights, her communications with people, her so on and so forth. So sometimes you'll probably need a good mix of both of the two assistants that you'll need in your business. But again, that's only because they have been able to flesh out their company to that point where they don't have to focus on social media because they have a whole social media team. They don't have to focus on sales because there's a whole sales team. But that's kind of the image that I always like to paint when it comes to thinking of how a virtual assistant can work and fit in your business.
Yeah, that's interesting. And then in that case, then, so do you see many people, many freelancers and businesses hire multiple personal assistants, or not personal, but like multiple assistants?
For our clients, and of course they're not really freelancers, most of our clients have been like coaches and consultants, they will have different specialists and then they'll have one virtual assistant. But I think that's the best way that I could say that is they'll have a graphics content person, they'll have a finance admin person, they'll have, you know, sales lead gen assistant, but then they'll have their virtual assistant running the three of them, or managing the three of them, or getting them aligned to where they need to be. So that's kind of where I see that. It's not that they have multiple virtual assistants, they have their one person, their second reign, and then helping manage everyone else. And that's the same thing for my amazing assistant, is I only have her, but then she helps me manage our managers, she helps me manage our social media team, she helps me manage everyone else around me in the business. Because she has mastered being that Jill of all trades of working with everyone else.
That's interesting. I've got a question that you might be able to help me out on then. So if you get a virtual assistant and you are looking to delegate her more responsibilities or delegate him more responsibilities in the management of your business, how do you go about keeping people motivated and engaged? And I'll explain myself a little bit better. So I'm just imagining myself in my business right now, in my day-to-day runnings. You know, I communicate with different team members. We talk, we catch up, we talk about the tasks. Obviously, those meetings aren't, you know, they take my time, right? So I could buy back some time by not having those meetings. But I think it would then also have a negative impact on my relationship and the employee's motivation if I handed those meetings over to a virtual assistant. I mean, how would you recommend going about that, and what is the balance? Like, how can you buy back time by handing over sort of project management to an assistant without having that massive negative impact on employee motivation or, you know, freelance motivation?
Well, first is always keep in mind that you never can delegate leadership. That's kind of the main thing. So I made that mistake myself, where I was delegating meetings with people on my team to my assistant. That was with my first assistant that I had to XU. She left to start her own business, actually, which is really cool. But I made that mistake with her, where I, same thing, I was feeling overwhelmed. There were a lot of people that I was doing meetings with. I wanted to minimize it so I can open up my calendar to do sales calls with potential clients. And that ended up doing basically creating that same scenario that you just painted out, where people were feeling demotivated, people weren't feeling heard because they weren't talking to management, they were talking to the management buffer, basically. And I didn't also put in the work to settle those boundaries or actually verbally say like, hey, this is now her part of her roles and responsibilities. It was more of something that was accidentally passed on. So what ended up, what I learned from that is, one, is being intentional about hiring a manager, not your assistant, but hiring a manager. So the first thing, and of course, that I did after my assistant left, both from burnout and also from wanting to start her own business, was hire a manager. I hired a manager for our assistants. At that point, I was still handling everyone myself. I should have done that earlier. So then that was the intention of like, hey, this is your manager. You work directly with them. But then if you have anything at all, either she can bring it up with me, or you can just, here's my calendar. You can just mess with it and schedule a time for yourself. So that was kind of the first thing. The second one is, think of your assistant as an extension of you. They're not a replacement of you. They're an extension of you. For what I meant earlier with my assistant helps kind of manage and work with them is I still do one-on-ones with everyone in the admin team now, not just with everyone else in 2XU. That's a lot of meetings. But I do that. But then throughout the week, she has scheduled check-ins with them of like, hey, I know that Leanne gave you these tasks. Do you need any support? So it's just that. It's not management. It's support. Do you need any support on this? Can I help you on in making this just as a first draft so you have something that you can work on? So she has become that extension part of my brain where she checks in on people just to make sure that they have anything else. And if there's things that they might be too shy to bring up with me or they thought of in the middle of the week that they haven't been able to bring up, then my assistant immediately pings me like, hey, so-and-so needs this, so-and-so needs that. So then we're able to take action on it together. So I think that's the duality differences. One, be intentional about hiring a manager. And two is then your assistant is not a manager of them. They just are an extension of you in that support, basically, role that you offer as a leader.
That sounds good. I think you've shaped, well, like you've given me a lot of information about what an assistant actually is. Isn't, which is good to know, because then they're not sort of this one size fits all, they can do everything and they should do everything. There are these more like roles within the business that are more suited to that position. So would you be able to define for me, like, what is the ideal scenario for a virtual assistant? Like, or like, what would be best for a freelancer, as in what roles and tasks would they be doing in the ideal scenario?
So on the ideal scenario, if you've never hired an assistant before, let's say you don't have a team at all, it's usually what are the tasks that are taking up a lot of your time? They don't need to be done by you, but they still need to get done in the business. So of course, like, that's why the first thought always is digital marketing, because that's the one that takes a lot of time, still needs to get done in your business, but it doesn't have to be you. But there's also, of course, file management. There's the bookkeeping side, the admin side that you can hire out. Essentially, what are the things that fall through the cracks for you that would be so easy for someone else to start picking up? And I always recommend against hiring direct ROI right away. Like, hey, this person's going to do help me in sales. I'm like, yeah, they're going to fail at it, because especially if you've not systematized or documented it at all. So when you're trying to think of that scale of what to delegate or what to hire for, just think of that 80-20 of like, what are the two things that you know you absolutely have to be the one to do them because it makes you money in the business, and then starting to look at and delegate and automate the rest of that. Like I said, you don't want to make the mistake of thinking your assistant's a unicorn. You don't want to make the mistake that your assistant knows everything that's in your head just within the first week of meeting. It will take some time for them to learn your business, not to learn your systems, but how your business works. But it's also keeping in mind that you are kind of creating your second brain person of that extension of you to work while you're not while you might not be available, while you're not might not be working, to have that someone kind of be able to step in and think as you, think like you, so then things can keep going with them even without you in the business. So that's kind of the first few things to kind of consider and think about right off the bat.
Yeah, that's a great point you made about not hiring for the return on investment, because that's something that I've always focused on and I think has held me back a little bit. I'm always looking at, so I'm going to pay this person this much, how much money are they going to directly generate the business, when there are some metrics that don't translate to revenue. Like, oh, yeah. there's tasks and roles that they don't have a direct, I mean they will in some way, but they don't have a direct correlation to the revenue of the business. So that's a fantastic point there, and I'm still learning that myself. It does feel hard as a business owner to give away money and not see that money come back to you. Mm-hmm. I mean, Is that something that you struggled with as well when you were like starting out 2XU?
Kind of, mostly because like I did start out with hiring people just directly for the clients. It took me, what, 7, 8 months to hire someone for admin, just because I know that they wouldn't be directly, but then they'll be freeing me up from the other things. But then because I did run the publishing company for a while, I kind of, it was one of those things where it was kind of really subtle, like, oh no, I can do this on my own. I don't need to hire someone who might not be directly ROI. But at the same time, I was like, no, it would have been hard for me to be able to do what I'm doing if I didn't hire out the other stuff. So that's kind of the balance that I had in my head of one, making sure that I had enough time to do the things that I need to be doing in the business, and then the other one is knowing that that's kind of part of being an entrepreneur as well, is letting go of that idealism of every single person makes me a lot of money in my business. Some people are just not there to make money, but to make me time. So that was a mindset shift that I had to have.
Yeah, and I guess as well, you need to see of it as like a maintenance cost, right? A cost to actually maintain the business. Because the business itself, you can think of as like, the money generating machine. Or maybe even think about it like a car, right? It's the place that gets you from A to B. And, the employees that you see a direct internal investment are the fuel, right? So you put the fuel in the car and it goes. There's no fuel, it doesn't go. But then you also need, the oil, the all that other stuff. I'm not a mechanic, but all that other stuff that goes into the car that keeps it running, because without it, it's still going to break down. You don't see how that oil is, getting you that further distance, or in this case, how that person is getting you a direct return on investment. But without it, the business would actually start to crumble. And I guess that's where as well, like, HR comes into play, where freelancers really don't think about this, especially. I mean, it isn't something that you have to think about as a beginner freelancer. It's like, okay, how am I gonna, maintain this group of people and keep them motivated and, make sure that when someone leaves, someone else is replaced. This stuff isn't going through your mind as a beginner freelancer, but as you start to scale, I can, yeah, assure you it definitely
It'll start being
does.
in your head for sure.
Exactly, yeah. And so if people come to you and they go through 2XU to find an assistant, is how does that process work? Do you just hand them over and then they sort of leave your jurisdiction that it would be in, like go to them? Or is there still a strong relationship between you, the virtual assistant, and the person employing that assistant?
So it's an ongoing relationship, basically. So on our end, we take on the time and effort goes into recruitment, a finding person. They go through multiple of our filters before they even get to our client. Once the client says, "Yep, let's go with this person," then they go through like an onboarding process where it's for the first 90 days, it's just us setting them up for success, like setting up things that you wouldn't think about if you were hiring someone for the first time, like your task tracker, your delegation system, putting in place where to put like starting up in procedures or your assets. So we help put in the seeds basically that later on, 6 months later, once they're busy, once things are rolling, that they will fall back on, like, oh yeah, we have our task tracker, we can keep using that. Or, oh yeah, do you remember where we put that asset? Like, oh, 2X you actually put in the system, so then it's easy for us to capture that. So there's that ongoing support and maintenance that as the assistant also grows is a very usual thing. Is let's say you hired someone just for like marketing, and this happens a lot for us, is someone gets hired just because that was the pain point, those things that they want to work on. 6 months later, they're handling operations because that's kind of the natural thing when someone is your second brain, is whatever you're focused on, they're going to start focusing on as well. So that's kind of where we come in, is even as they shift and grow in your company, we're able to support them. We're able to give them the systems so then they can move to that next level in the company, so they can move to the next level smoothly as well. So it's kind of that stair step that as the assistant and the client and their business grows, because that's usually what happens when you're a really good assistant, we're able to keep supporting them through that whole journey as well. And at the same time, for the EA side, they have the usual Philippine benefits. They're not a freelancer, but they don't get any of that. They get health insurance. They are able to have backup laptops, internet if they need to. They're not just one-on-one work, freelance working with a client, they have a whole company basically backing them up that they can tap into everyone else's expertise to be able to get to where they want to be. So it's kind of the both sides of that support is one for the client and, of course, majorly for the EA as well.
Yeah, exactly. And then they've got, like, the assistants got that level of security where they can just focus on the work. They don't have to focus on that. If this guy doesn't pay me this week, then mm-hmm. I'm going to have to find another buddy, and, you know, they can't exactly. fully focus. Yeah. I do like what you've said there about the assistant being like a second brain, and they'll start mm-hmm. to focus on what you're focusing on. And I think that can really help freelancers scale. So, mm-hmm. so do, would an assistant come in and would they shadow the founder or the entrepreneur oh, yeah. or the freelancer to start with? Is that kind of how they get you guys get the ball rolling?
Yeah. So a lot of it is we make sure that one, they have daily syncs, but even if it's just 5 minutes, and sometimes it is just 5 minutes, where you go through what am I focusing on, what do I need help with today, and then what I want to, what are you focused on? So then the EA goes through their priorities and what they might struggle through the day. So then it gives that open communication for one. Second is, it also shows the EA what are the things that you would usually struggle in, and then so then they can start taking that and taking care of that. As a very easy and funny example, I hate being on the phone with people, like calling up like local places here, like just here. So my assistant does that. Like I'm currently moving, and she's called the telco company to tell them like, hey, her internet connection is going to be moving, or like calling up the moving van, or all of that stuff that I don't like doing, just because I tell her like, hey, I'm doing this call, I don't really want to do it, and then she's like, oh, I'd be more than happy to do that. So then you're developing that back and forth with your assistant, and at the same time you're learning the things that they might not be the best at. So then you can both be, and I always think of it like whatever is your gap, I always think of it as like a clock. Like you guys need to kind of work together to fill in the gap, so then the clock keeps moving and growing. And it starts with that, or like just having that daily communication, so then things don't fall through the cracks. Because I've seen it all as well, where we've had a client for like a year or 2 years even. We have a client who they've grown so much that they only talk with their assistant twice a week. And because they've only been talking twice a week, then things have fallen through the cracks. The assistant's not always up to date on what are the priorities, on how things have shifted already. Because so much, as you would know, so much can happen in a day. Within 24 hours, our focus went from, oh, we're getting like five sales, and shifting like, oh, we had five sales. Now we have to work on delivery. So it's so quick on how things can shift in the business that having that daily sync with your assistant helps so well in getting you guys in sync, and as well as them learning how to become that second brain for you.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. It's just having that person there to be able to absorb and learn, and like you said, that synchronization is super important, because as you said, there's so much stuff can happen in one day that you mm-hmm. don't speak to them for one day, you're putting out all these fires working on this stuff, so then you don't speak to them the next day, and then all of a sudden it seems like a task that's in the past, so you're not working on it mm-hmm. now, and then it can just spiral out of control, where the assistant, I guess, is trying to do the best they possibly can, but they don't have the communication and resources they need to be able to do the job efficiently.
Exactly.
But yeah, how do you, so you say you meet for 5 minutes a day, what would these meetings entail? Like what, if you have a virtual assistant, what are the number one priorities you need to do in those daily meetings?
So I say 5 minutes because like for me and my assistant, we have done 5 minutes, but it's taken like a year and a half for us to get to 5 minute calls. So typically it's actually in reality like 15 to 30, depending on if there's a lot of things going on. If you guys are doing lunch, it might be a little bit longer. Or if you guys are just doing the day-to-day check-in, then it's usually shorter. So for me and my assistant, the main thing is, one, what are you focused on for today? What are the thing, your top three priorities? And then I talk about like, hey, I might be struggling with this. Like, hey, I see that this is coming up on my calendar. Can you move it around? So that's become from the priority, small things that they can start doing. And then it ends usually like for me, I always end it like, how can I support you through this day? Instead of her, how she can support me, I always ask like, how can I support you through this day? Because she's already like taken off a bajillion things off of my mind. So then for me, can I give a little clarity? Can I create an asset to make it easier? Can I just do a voice clip so then it's easy for you to remind yourself later on what you were supposed to be doing. So it comes from that point of view that my assistant isn't supporting me. I'm supporting her because I already gave her the things that she needed to do anyway. So that's usually what those things are at. In the beginning, it'll be very much directional. Like you're like, hey, I need this and this and this to be done. I need... this is on fire. You know, make sure that we have the fire hose ready, and then also the how we want this to look like, so it doesn't get caught on fire next time. And then as that relationship grows with the EA, they catch the fires before you even, or they make sure that it's taken care of. So it is an evolution of what those meetings can look like, but it's usually that of like, what are your priorities for the day, and how can I support you? Those are the ones that have stayed basically through the last year and a half of working with my EA.
Yeah. So I guess as well, it's about managing expectations of people listening to this podcast and people wanting to hire a virtual assistant. You're not going to be able to get to that point of where you are now, where you can just have those 5 minutes. You're so in sync with your assistant that you're already working great as a team. There is that sort of warm-up period. I think you said 90 days or 3 months to sort of get to a position, or not where you are now, but like a good flow state, right? So 3 months to get to a good flow state with your virtual assistant.
Exactly. Yep.
Nice. And do you ever struggle, or do clients ever struggle with the time difference? Because if you're looking at, you know, the United States, or where I am now in Spain, there's a fair bit of time difference. So how do you guys manage that? Because you're always, it's not like somebody's traveling over the world and they're in this time zone then, maybe for a couple of weeks we're only 2 hours apart. With somebody set in quite a distant time zone, how do you manage those challenges?
Well, for us, we learned within like the first 2 years of 2XU, we learned that we didn't want to take on clients who did need their assistant to be night shift, mostly because one, they're usually not as smart as we want them to be, because they're pushing themselves to work at night. Two, then that also meant that for a lot of everyone else in the admin, we needed someone who was working at night. And then three, most of the time, it needs to have a lot of syncs with the client anyway. Because most of the time when they need someone who's at their time zone, that means that they're hopping on calls, they're hopping on projects and different things. So the EA usually won't be able to work on their own. They're mostly just being that shadow for their client, versus for us, the kind of clients that we're looking for is the EA can work independently. They'll have sync time. So we have EAs who are either working really early in the morning, like 4 a.m. So then they're catching their client in their afternoon or the evening. Or we have EAs who are working up to, at least my own kind of boundary for most of our clients, to say like 12 midnight or 1 a.m. That's it. Because if you work pushed further than that, then the EA will get burned out really, really easily. So those are the kind of two times. But like I said, for me, I'm much more of an advocate of freeing up basically my client's time, which means that they shouldn't be on their EA, you know, 8 hours a day just working and watching them work. And at the same time, freeing up the EA's time so then they can have more of that creativity, more of the ideas in the shower, because they don't have to feel that they're super pressured to just work through the night, basically just because that's their client's time zone.
That's a good point. I guess the trust level is a big aspect of it as well, and not trying to micromanage the virtual assistant, because you're just not going to get the best out of them. But yeah, I mean, it's been really good to speak to you, because now I'm sort of, in my mind, I'm debating like, ah, damn, maybe I need an assistant, because the way I've been operating is I do have an assistant, but basically I have multiple assistants contracted for a few hours a week for very specific tasks.
Not a virtual assistant, that's what I mean.
Yeah, exactly. But I guess I see them more as assistants in, like, because I have people on specific tasks that I wouldn't class as that kind of role, on like, you know, digital marketing, on sales, that sort of stuff. But I think it would be, maybe beneficial to, you know, bring all of those things into one, and then build more of a relationship with that individual and have them, you know, be that second part of my brain, and, you know, learn from me and I can learn from them, and then we can go forward from there. But yeah, that sounds really cool. And I'll jump on. I mean, we've talked loads about virtual assistants and 2XU. But I wanted to mention the fact as well that you won an award, I believe, for the 100 most influential Filipino women for 2022 and 2023. How did that come about and how did that feel?
So aside from 2XU, the other thing that I've been building as well is just creating a lot of content, like a lot of educational content. Right before this even, I was recording the YouTube videos that I do every Sunday and Thursday, and a lot of it has been just educational of like, hey, this is how you get started a virtual assistant, or if you're an entrepreneur, this is how you get started working with an assistant. So I started building that, and kind of as naturally creator that I am, like creating videos, I've built up, I think I'm like 500 people from getting to 20,000 subscribers on YouTube. So I did whatever I posted on YouTube, I post on LinkedIn, I post on Facebook, everywhere else. So on the LinkedIn side, I did start growing there as well as my YouTube grew. So that's kind of where anytime that I would post content, I would focus on making educational, making it where people can share and give it to anyone else that they wanted to share it to. So that's kind of how I grew to that point of like, oh, I didn't even know I was nominated for the award, and then I won it. And I'm like, oh, cool. I'll just keep doing what I'm doing, and it has worked twice at this point. And I've been getting a lot of these really cool accolades, just because I just create content from what I believe in, where I want to create a world where people can work anywhere that they want to.
Yeah, I mean, I strongly stand by that mission as well. I think that, having a role or position, job, or starting a company where you can work, wherever, just it gives you that freedom and flexibility that allows your mind to be more creative as well. Like instead of being locked into somewhere that you don't like or don't want to be, yeah, it's awesome. And but why did you? What was your main motivation in starting the content? Was it purely the fact that, I have this information that I can share with people and it can help them to live better lives? Or is there from do you have some, business objectives behind it as well? So, content equals views equals more business.
It was my sisters. My sisters at the time when I started creating a lot of the content, were also 15 years old and 16 years old, so exactly where I was when I started. And they were like, how did you start working online again? And then they would ask me specific questions of like, how do you create a resume? Okay, now how do you create an application letter? So I would just whip out my phone and I would create less than 5 minute videos. And that was it. Like anytime they had a question, I would create a video out of it, post it basically. And that's kind of how I kept going. Even until now, I'm looking at comments on my videos to get ideas of what are people asking about and want me to expand on. When ChatGPT came out, I've created a ton of content on ChatGPT. I still do it till this day. I'm now talking about like Google Gemini. So it's still the drive is still what people are curious about. Like, what are the things that I can help guide them? And everything else is a bonus. Like the awards, the accolades, the clients who are coming in, those are now just in my head, just a bonus. My focus is still that mission of mine to basically create more work for everyone else.
Yeah. So is it something that you enjoy then? Would you say that you enjoy making content?
There are different days, to be honest, but most of the time I do. Like there'll be days where I'm just out of like I call it extrovert juice because I'm naturally an introvert. I'm just out of extrovert juice that even talking to a camera, I'm so tired. I don't want to do that. But then there's days like yesterday where I just vlogged my whole day. It's still sitting on my phone. I just have to edit it. But then I was able to have that energy to be able to vlog the whole day. So it depends on that. But the thing that's always permanent is I'm doing my twice a week videos of making videos for people who want to be virtual assistants and want to hire or have a remote business overall. So those are the ones where I've always have energy for that. Everything else is kind of just, again, just more fun and not so much of a focus.
Yeah. And is that something that you say you've got that sat there ready to be edited? Is that something that you would hand over to your assistant to be edited? Or is it more you'd like to have control over the look and feel of the video?
For most of the YouTube stuff or the things that get repurposed, totally to this amazing video editor that I now have. But for the more personal stuff, like the stuff that I like to do voiceovers with, I still do it on my own. Because mostly, I guess, like there's little funny little things that I like, oh, I should have not recorded that. Let me go back to chop that out. So there are ones that are more creative, things that I like to do for fun, but the ones that are pumped out basically at a pace. I do have an amazing editor who does it.
Yeah. Yeah, nice, because that is, yeah, it's one of those things that is quite easy to hand over. Do you have any specific goals with YouTube, with all the socials and content? Is there something that you're climbing towards? Is it you want the plaque or the silver plaque or whatever it is on YouTube? Or is it just because of that, enjoyment level that you continue to do it?
It's definitely on my vision board to get the 100,000 mark. But it's more of a... In my head, I call it a side quest. It's more of a side quest for myself to just do these projects, because if it wasn't fun, then it wouldn't be worth doing for me. Getting to that accolade, all of that, I know in my head, especially as a business owner, that they're more just, what they call vanity metrics. What actually matters to me is that the comments that I get, like, hey, I didn't even know a virtual assistant existed before I got your channel, or someone messaging me on Facebook or on Instagram, like, hey, I went through all of your videos, this is what I got started, can I just have advice on this little thing that I need to move forward? So those are the things that I look forward to. It's not really much of the numbers. I know it matters to a lot of people when they're looking at you, but at the same time, for me, where I'm at, I'm very comfortable with just being that I one of my brands used to be a virtual ate, which is ate is older sister in Tagalog. So I just want to be that virtual older sister that people can ask advice to, and that's all that moves me toward my own goal. So yeah.
Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah, I like that a lot. And I guess because as well your income isn't dependent on views, then you really can just make authentic content and content that you feel is going to help people, right?
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah, so that's always a good thing to, I think, look at when you're, looking for somebody to, watch their content, is how much do they need me to be watching this video right now? If the answer is a lot, then can you trust that content 100%? Yeah. Who knows? But I want to say a massive thank you for coming on the podcast today and sharing your experiences with me and giving me personally a load of advice, as well as the broader audience today. And if people want to catch more of you, if they want to go to your YouTube channel, if they want to catch you on LinkedIn, where can everybody go to find you?
So I've been blessed with a very unique name, but a very Googleable name, which is just Lian Laila Cava. Then you'll find just literally everything else about me on there. I've also done a lot of work to set myself up to be easily Googleable, but that's the easiest and fastest way.
Oh, nice. Okay, cool. I'll put links to your channel, to 2XU, and whatever else you want as well in the show notes. So if you are interested in checking out more of this amazing content, then yeah, go head over to those show notes and yeah, you'll have the links there. One last massive thank you as well for coming on the podcast today. Hopefully I'll speak to you again sometime soon, and yeah, thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me.